which is a total lie. Every time we called and didn't get an answer after about 20 rings, yeah, we hung up. But we never called intensely and called and hung up on nobody. But still, yet CPS took it upon their own hands to cut our phone calls down to twice a week to our children, which we were calling every day.
And get this, the girls can't have phone calls, is it the girls whose parents, the foster parents, don't mind?
The boys' foster parents can call anytime.
Right, so because they cut the girls' telephone calls down, they cut the boys down to be fair. So now no one gets to be called more than twice a week, which I find ridiculous.
Yeah, especially after my children's been in abusive situations already. That's what really worries me, is that they've kept that contact down on us. And I think it was just a move for them to try to separate my kids and me just a little bit more, you know.
Arlie, I do have a suggestion that just occurred to me, though. I think that your boys should be calling their attorneys daily to say that they want the calls. They want to start getting the calls again. Because, I'm sorry, I've been a foster parent. As foster parents, we're not there for our convenience. We're there to help support family reunification, to get the kids to visits. That's our job. That's what we're being paid for. And if you don't like the job, don't take it. If you think you should be having dinner without being interrupted by phone calls, or, you know, that the kids' parents are just pains in the butt and a thorn in your side, then don't be a foster parent.
Let me ask you this, Roxanne. I mean, it's all very well to ask for, you know, attorney visits daily. Why not ask the kids to ask that they be returned to their parents? I mean,
well, either or, but yeah. They need to be calling their lawyers daily. They are old enough, and they need to be doing that. They don't know their rights. They aren't being given their rights.
Well, I had to tell my kids that the court date was coming up. We received papers about 2 weeks ago about our court date coming up, you know. And I asked the kids, had they received any papers about court? Oh, no. You know, they said, no, we haven't received anything. So I told them right in front of the CPS.
They have received papers.
They have?
They have received papers. Whether the foster parent lets them see them or not,
right,
is another thing. They are supposed to be allowed to go to court. Our judicial system, the judge is too lazy. He doesn't want him there. It complicates things. I mean, they have to demand their rights. Then the foster parent won't be willing to give him a ride to court. So then you'll have to find a social worker. And the kids are going to have to do it themselves. We're expecting a lot out of kids. Luckily, one of your kids is old enough to take some of this responsibility. But most kids, they just get stomped on. Their rights are stomped on. They never get to talk to the judge. They never get to go to court. They never get to ask for what they want. And all they talk about is protecting the kids. Supposedly their CASA worker is supposed to find out what the kids want. But all these people are right in line with the county. They read between the lines. Well, little Johnny says he wants to come home, but I can tell he's really happy in foster care. You know, they don't express what the kid wants anyway.
This court date is September 12th. Is at what time?
8:30 in the morning.
And what court?
At the Santa Cruz, where the Santa Cruz Jail is.
Right, that's
Yonks Superior Court.
Santa Cruz Jail. That's across the street from the main courthouse.
All right.
Wow. Well, you know what we might do is we might ask you to call back in about like 10 or 15 minutes for a sort of a final recap, and then open up the phone lines now. Roxanne's made this suggestion for anyone who's been listening who hasn't been able, you know, who wants to call in, and because we've been on the line, hasn't been able to, and also doesn't have an internet connection, so they can't do it by internet. I don't see anything that's come through at the rnorris@hotmail.com.
Okay.
Is there anything you want to say before you go?
Yeah, if there's anybody else out there that's having these kind of problems with CPS, please contact me.
And again, your number is?
Is 724-7815.
724-7815. I'm talking with Stacy and Orly Jones, whose four children are about to be permanently removed from their home. Is that accurate?
We don't know permanently, but we know the baby particularly only has about another month in child protective services before they can decide against reunification and put her up for adoption.
And our indications are that that's in the cards?
I don't know. We don't have any indications. They can do whatever they want, which they've been doing all along. That is the scary part.
Huh.
I really don't care what their plans are. The point is that they're not letting the parents know.
You know, and that's one thing that they have against me is because I tell them that I don't care, that I'm not going to be treated this way, and, you know, and they just keep throwing stuff at me, you know, and keep putting me off. And I'm not going to stand here for it, man. I'm going to contact everybody I can.
All right, well, contact us in about 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Becky asked me about family reunification. The family reunification statistics are interesting. The counties will tell you that they reunify 40% of the families, which sounds really good, until you know that the other statistic is that 40% of the children that are in foster care should never have been placed there in the first place. That means the kids that there's absolutely no case to work up, and they knew it. Nothing was wrong, no criminal charges, whatever. So really, it's the kids that they never had a case on anyway, but they took in totally traumatized and then returned to their parents. And the rest of the kids, and those are the ones that should be working on family reunification too, those kids, just like Stacy and Orly's kids, have no rights and are just supposed to do what they're told and shut up.
In case you want to call in, the number is 427-3772. Line is open. If anybody wishes to get in touch and talk with myself and with Roxanne Acustapache here, or if you want to just comment on what you've heard, or perhaps discuss your own experiences, 427-3772. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz that you're listening
to.
And looks like we got a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Roxanne. It seems, this is just completely off the, but it seems to me that in some way, one has to find the responsible person and do something, you know, do something to that person. What occurs to me is that an attorney, there must be a name or several names for the crimes that are being committed. And that all, I would think that an accomplished attorney, or even not a terribly accomplished attorney, would be to come up with the names of those crimes, find the person who is the person and persons, and simply go on the offensive against them in some way to file a case that says these people are engaging in, I don't know what occurred to me, I'm sure this won't work, but it's white slavery. But I mean, there has to be a technical term for what, you know, kidnapping. What about kidnapping? I don't know, but in some way, it should be possible to craft a case that would go on the offensive against these people and make them personally responsible. Because as long as you're talking about services and so on, there's not very much that can be done. And I think the recent discussion has been a proof of that.
Well, you know, Tom, we think that Orly and Stacy should be able to file child abuse charges. They know who the foster parents are, and they should be able to do that at the very least. But do you know that they will not take a complaint? They will not take charges, the DA's office. They tell them they are unable to do that. So even if you were to name every person that has committed the abuse and you know their names, they will not move on it.
Well, there must be a way, it seems to me. Again, Roxanne, you know, I'm navigating blind, but it does seem to me that then there's a way to go after the people. I mean, you know, there are things that you can do, for instance, with a recorder that refuses to record something that she or he needs to record. There are things you do when whoever says, we can't do that, it seems to me, is also guilty of a malpractice, or in some way there are terms for somebody who fails in their duty in office.
Right.
And you go after that. I mean, whoever says to you,
gotcha,
we cannot do this.
We understand, Tom. We catch your drift, and we'd like to find a way to do that. Thank you.
Also, just for all the callers out there, this isn't just Santa Cruz. This is the mood across the nation. And I want you to know that when you hear statistics like there's, you know, 50 billion abandoned children, that every child that CPS kidnaps, the parents get papers saying that they have abandoned their children and that they are not providing adequate supervision for their children anymore, that they are refusing to provide food and sustenance to their children, clothing and education. Even though the county took the children against the parents' will, the children are described in legal papers as being abandoned. So whenever you hear those statistics, don't believe them. Every child that CPS kidnaps is an abandoned child by virtue of their computer and their very tricky legal wording. And this is what allows them to take the children. The children have to be abandoned by the laws for them to take them. So they just turn them into abandoned children.
427-3772 is the number to call in. We haven't got much time. Sorry we cut you off time. We have to move along. We're trying to get as much room in here as possible. Roxanne, you're following a number of other cases, too, I imagine, around this issue.
I have a case in Iowa right now that it's the same thing. All kinds of improprieties. In Iowa, their favorite thing is to pronounce the parents, like, to have diminished capacity or to be not very intelligent. So they just give them a test in the language they don't speak, flunk them, and then not only take the child they want to take, but run into the home and take perfectly healthy children. You know, by the way, when you lose a child, they come into your home and they take all the children. So if you somebody were to take your child in the hospital, they also come and take them all. So even though those children may be perfectly healthy, doing great, be straight-A students, CPS comes in like the mounted police and removes them.
You know, you mentioned, actually, you went into a case involving, well, here it looks like an incoming call. We'll talk about that in a moment. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Matt calling from Santa Cruz.
Hey, Matt.
And, gee, it's just, this is really an outrageous situation, and I can't help thinking that a large part of the reason that the, you know, these kids were taken away is for what I prefer to call, like, you know, stylistic reasons, that they don't particularly like the fact that these kids were living in a mobile home, even though they seem to be thriving and doing reasonably well. There's also, like Orly was talking about, you know, if you ever read The Grapes of Wrath and you remember how the farm owners stood at the gates of California and clubbed those poor Okies that were coming here for a job, you know, there's a certain degree of prejudice against guys who speak with an Appalachian accent, and you know, I can't help feeling that figures prominently in something like this. But all of that aside, the real problem is that there doesn't seem to be any mechanism for due process and legal recourse for these issues of abuse and everything be addressed.
You know, that's a sad thing. There really is. There's court hearings and stuff. But when the only lawyers that will take on the county are actually paid by the county, public defenders, then even though there is a bit of a venue for redress, if you have an attorney that's just totally satisfied that things will work out and in some ways and trusts the CPS investigators because she or he doesn't really know what she's talking about, she's never been in that system, then you're going to lose because that little bit of window you have to protect yourself, no one's taking advantage of it.
Matt, I'm going to roll on you because I want to get another caller in.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Roxanne, you said that you talked at length about this Iowa case before, and about how healthy children were taken in addition because of initially because of a language problem. But you also mentioned that your free radio show here in Santa Cruz was apparently heard in Iowa and made some ripples at CPS.
No, I'd love to say we were heard in Iowa. Wouldn't that make us great?
Hey.
But what happened was a local woman from the Oaxacan tribe, who other tribe members had been victimized in Iowa previously, had gotten a call about another case, and they were using the same kind of criteria to take this baby away, saying that the father and the mother had diminished capacity. And it's pretty interesting because the mother's white, and they're still pulling that one. And so we got to working on the case. I've been working with Hilaria Cruz on this case, who's the woman that called me, someone who has a lot of contacts. And we've been giving them hell in Iowa. It's been, I have to say, the case is heartbreaking, but some of what we've done has really been fun. We have a newspaper reporter in Washington. Hilaria got someone interested who called the county in Iowa and wanted the story. The whole CPS, when they went into court the last time, we found out from the mother that they were in a tiz. They had been getting FedExes from me. They had been contacted by newspaper reporters. They'd been contacted by the linguistics, the head of the department at the University of Texas. Because one of our problems is that they have provided no interpretation for the Chatino-speaking father. They just assume Chatino's like Spanish. It's nothing like Spanish. So we've just been keeping them busy, but my job is to build a case. That's how I see my job. The lawyers don't do it, the court-appointed lawyers, and so my job is to contact their employers, to contact anyone that's had anything to do with the father and the mother, who has positive feedback about them, who has, and, you know, this is hard, like the mother makes her living babysitting. Well, now that CPS has her baby, do you really think that the people she babysits for wants to write her a letter of reference? Now they're afraid someone's going to come in and take their baby. So, you know, a lot of doors are closed to people. You just heard Orly speak. Orly has agreed to go more public because he wants his kids back. But, you know, he faces losing his job. He faces people finding out that he has a prescription for medical marijuana. And the good old boys that he works with canning him. It's never a win-win situation when CPS gets a hold of you. And also back to Orly's case, you know, even our county, although Marty Wormout and all of them are just shaking their booties for medical marijuana and big smiles and they believe in it, it's actually being held against Orly in getting his children back. It can be looked at as an illegal thing that he's doing. It just depends on if CPS wants to go by Santa Cruz County, you know, our law here, where we say we want this to be okay, or by federal law. So people can have it always. If they want to get you, they can get you.
Well, what about the possibilities for CPS reform at a broader level? What kind of recommendations do you have, and are there any? Has it happened anywhere in the country or in any other countries, you think?
Counties have tried by getting oversight committees, but they're kind of like the police review board, you know, worthless. So that's not working. But really, there's supposed to be a movement right at the state level itself to redesign, change CPS so that it, quote, works. But changes they've made have not been significant. Only people that have been through the terror, the harassment, the illegality, the forced counseling with sickos know what it's like. And they're the only ones that can really speak to it, I think, and demand changes.
What kind of changes need to be made?
Well, for one thing, CPS needs to not have any sovereignty whatsoever, because the truth is you're guilty until proven innocent, and even after being proven innocent, you know, they'll still keep your kids if you do everything the court. A lot of people are innocent, But the court orders that they do things. So they'll do it to get their kids back. And even after they complete, as we've seen with Orly and Stacy, and have their certificates for everything they were ordered to take, and they have extra certificates for things they weren't ordered to take, they still can't get their kids back. Because I believe CPS knows that that judge, he's not following up on the case.
Have there been successful lawsuits? I know David Bovee in Berkeley has done a successful lawsuit. I'll ask you about that after we get this next caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, hello. Hello, Robert.
Hey, Rock Bernard. Sam.
Bernard giving
Hi,
you a call.
Hi, Bernard.
Hi. I just wanted to say to you, Roxanne, you know, that I'm just sitting here in shock, you know, that these people can get away with this for so long. And, you know, you would think that there'd be a million investigations by now. However, I thought of one thing, you know, which you may have thought of, but how about a grand jury filing a real complaint with the grand jury?
I believe our CPS has been indicted twice by the grand jury and nothing happens.
Can we try it again, or do you think that route is futile?
No, I'm not unwilling to try it again, but I see the grand jury as being the most... I mean, I always thought, oh, good, the grand jury, but then nothing happens and nothing changes, and I don't see what their purpose is.
Well, I agree with you that that is a reactionary institution, that just a few wealthy people, you know, that look at things. So, yeah, I agree with you, but I don't know what to think. I'm just shocked.
Well, your kids aren't your own. They are not yours anymore. Let me just tell you something. If you got in a car accident,
mm-hmm.
you and your wife with your child in the car,
mm-hmm.
they would put your child in foster care immediately. They would not look for his grandmother. They would not look for his auntie. And then the grandmother and the auntie and everybody else would have to fight to get that kid out. When I was adopting my children, I was in an adoption class
mm-hmm.
with a man about 30 years old. His brother and his brother's wife had been killed on a trip in Oregon, a vacation,
mm-hmm.
in a car accident, and their little 5-year-old son lived.
Mm-hmm.
He had been in foster care for a year. They wouldn't release the child to his uncle, who wanted to make a home for him. He had been in 7 homes in a year, in addition to losing his mother and father. And he was having to go through adoption classes with our county to prove that he was good enough to have his own nephew. And, you know, to me, the supposition being that being in 7 foster homes
mm-hmm.
was better than your blood uncle. You had to prove he was okay.
Unbelievable.
And this kid was being drugged.
Bernard, we're gonna keep talking about that. We're gonna take this off the air. So
Bernard, do you have anything else you want to
say? Yeah, I just wanted to say really fast, Robert. It was kind of funny. I read in today's newspaper, you know, that the AFL, you know, the Civil Liberties Union was giving awards to Marty and John Laird
yeah.
about civil rights and
right.
that kind of thing.
Oh, now I'm in a bar.
Yeah, unbelievable.
What was it for what?
Yesterday.
Yeah, I know, but for what?
Function of the ACLU.
For what?
Awards for what?
Some kind of civil rights thing. You can read about it in the Sentinel today.
Okay, thank you.
It would be hard to know what it was since we haven't seen any proof of it.
Right, yeah. Marty Wormhout is, of course, the individual had people arrested for serving free food back in 1988. And has repeatedly upheld the sleeping ban and actually muzzled discussion of that at a county level. And it's she's also spoken up for medical marijuana to her credit. And I suppose we can find some other things against CAMP, which is the program that the overflight program that tries the drug war program that she's opposed. And I commend her for that. But I've got to say that on balance. What, has she done anything for CPS? That's just another issue. Have you ever brought these issues to the supervisors?
I brought those issues to the Board of Supervisors. They absolutely are not interested. They use every excuse they can think of. Oh, you shouldn't tell us about it. You should write it. Oh, blah, blah. As a matter of fact, I just contacted Ellen Peary's office, and she will not have a meeting with me. I thought she might be somewhat interested I'm not sure if she's still a foster parent, but she's a past foster parent and got many of her votes from foster parents. So I thought she might be interested in how corrupt the system is under her. But I was just told to prepare a document for her to read because she's oh so busy. She really can't meet with me. I want to wind up, Robert, because I do have to leave. Okay.
You're on the air with perhaps Roxanne's last call.
Hello, Robert. Robert. This is Orly calling back.
Hey, Orly.
Orly, why don't you just let me sign off, and then I'll turn the program over to you guys.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
You didn't have anything you wanted to say to me, did you?
No.
Okay, this is all I want to say is I've gone fairly radical about this situation. I got into this work 4 years ago, and I want to tell you that I firmly believe that unless a child is in danger of being killed, literally maimed or killed in their own home, that the statistics do not support what is happening in our country. It's just a load of you-know-what to make the public support this lawless arm of government that's just like the IRS or any other lawless arm of the government. So when Robert asks me things on the radio, which I could just pull every little gray hair on his head out for, like, well, did you see the marks, Roxanne? How do you know this is so?
Yeah.
You know, playing devil's advocate may be cute, but it is so not productive in these instances because it's gotten to the point where kids are being hurt so much. Kids that were healthy and happy are drugged. They're in remedial homes for the special. When there was not a thing wrong, they had a brilliant future ahead of them. And then they were ripped away from their mom and dad, ripped out of their favorite foster home, and over again moved like chess pieces. So you better watch out for me, CPS.
Hear, hear. You've been listening to Roxanne Acosta-Pache. And Roxanne, have you got a number people can call if they
462-5509. And you nuts out there, don't come out of the woodwork. I'm tired today.
Thank you, Roxanne. Hey, Orly, thank you for calling back.
You're welcome.
So, you got a court date coming up on September 12th, 8:30 at the jail courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to be decided at that hearing?
Really, I'm not sure. I mean, the judge already granted you reunification. I think this is just like a review of it. And I guess CPS is going to go in there and tell a bunch of lies again, you know, so they can still keep grabs on my kids. They've got me so upset, man. I don't know which way to turn. You know, I've had major accidents in my lifetime, and I've been burned with second degree burns, and this is the most painful thing I've ever had to deal with in my life.
Hear, hear. Are you getting any support from any quarters that is giving you some encouragement?
No, not really. Right now we're fighting a battle by ourselves, you know, and Roxanne's joined in with us, which she was with us last time we went to court, and my wife kind of dropped the ball because I've been busy working, and I kept telling her to contact Roxanne, you know, but she finally didn't do it till this week, and, you know, now we're on the radio show and stuff, so.
Well, you're getting the word out here, Orly.
Yeah.
I always recommend... Yeah, I know you're not much of a writing guy, but if you can find some way, maybe Roxanne can write up a kind of a summary of what's happened. We can issue it as a sort of a press release if you can't get any action from your attorneys. And I'd advise close consult attorneys or public pretenders, whatever they are. Talk to Roxanne and the attorneys, and if you can't get a substantive reassurance that really reassures you, because I guess they can, you know, glad hand you all they want. I'd say get this thing out in a concise document to the media and hold a press conference an hour before talking about this issue. Get other people who have been abused by CPS to come and have a crowd out there. You know, I mean,
yes,
that's
what I'd like to do. It would please me, you know, if some people would join in with me here, because I'm sure I'm not the only parent that's had these problems. I'm sure these games are played on plenty of people, you know, but most people are submissive to it, and they just sit back and they don't say anything, you know, and that's why they lose their children. I'm gonna say everything I can to anybody I can, you know, because I'm not gonna let them get by, basically, because I feel that they're using my medical medication against me, because the Sylvia Hernandez, the investigator, and also Sharon Brackett, the first one that done the assessment, both told me that they were biased towards my medication. So I think this is a whole deal.
You mean against your medication, or?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Now you might want to talk to WHAM people too about this, because they may be finding.
I called Vicky and Mike, and they said that there wasn't really anything that they could do for me. Right now, you know, I even tried to join in, you know, for WHAM for the medication part of it, and they're not accepting any new applications right this minute. But you know,
hey Orly,
yes,
I'm leaving, but I'm going to listen on the radio. If I hear you blame Stacy for not calling me, I'm going to get you.
Okay.
Don't be doing that, thinking I'm not listening.
All right.
Bye. Good luck. I'll talk to you at home.
Thanks, Roxanne.
Hey, thank you, Roxanne. Mm-hmm. Roxanne, you were saying before you left that WHAM has not been helpful in these cases.
No, they're helpful.
Yeah, right
WHAM
now they're
helps
not accepting
themselves,
any,
is what Roxanne
you know, anybody
said.
New. So I guess I might be kind of like on a waiting list, I hope at least, to join in with them, you know, because like everybody tells me, you know, everything's strongest in numbers, you know, and... right now, that's what I need is you know, people to join in with me here and show the CPS that they can't get by with doing people this way. I mean, if you've got people out there that's treating their kids wrong, you know, I'm all for taking their kids away from them, but I don't treat my kids wrong. I don't beat my kids. I don't use corporal punishment. If they get mean to me, I just take something they like and make them sit down or take the TV away from them or something, you know. And if I'm doing wrong there, then you know what's the mean
yeah,
to
you
do?
Don't blame yourself for this machine you've gotten caught up in. Stacy, you have any comments on this stuff? Any thoughts yourself?
I don't. Right now, it's just this stuff is just getting my blood pressure up and it's just, the longer I go without my baby, the harder it gets.
You know, maybe there. What you need to do also is get in touch with people who are suffering the same kind of thing you are, and maybe the way to find those people is by getting in touch with Roxanne. Give her a call. There are probably support groups for people who have been CPS abused, so to speak, and who are trying to, you know, recover from that and trying to fight that.
Yeah, you know, I kind of think if I can find out how to do it, I'd like to start a nonprofit organization to help keep CPS in check, you know, because what they've put me through, if there's anybody out there that would help support that, please contact me.
And again, the number is 724-7815, 724-7815 to talk to Stacy or Orly Jones. Thank you for coming on the air. Anything else you two want to say before we move on here?
No, other than, you know, God bless everybody, and if there's somebody out there that can help me, give us a call, please.
Thank you both, and good luck. Keep in touch.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, of course, 96.3 FM. If you have any thoughts on anything you've heard and you want to speak about them, now's the time. 427-3772. 427-3772 is the call-in number. If you want to email, it's rnorse@hotmail.com. rnorse@hotmail.com. We have about an hour and 15 minutes left in the program. And again, from 4 to 6, tune in today for the Rotkin-Kennedy-Williams debate. Rotkin and Kennedy are council members who gave us the sit on the sidewalk within 14 feet of a building, get a citation, do it twice, go to jail, leave a piece of unattended property there, get a citation, do it twice, go to jail, hold up a sign peacefully on the sidewalk from a seated position, or after dark, seeking money. Fine, once, twice, go to jail. These are the people who are criminalizing poverty in order to get rid of visibly homeless people to gentrify the downtown under the excuse of public safety. They aren't alone. They've got their political hack associates in other cities who are doing the same thing. This is not to say that Kennedy and Rotkin aren't decent human beings in some other context, and that they aren't friendly people, that they aren't reasonable and good on other issues, particularly national and international issues where they aren't really locally accountable. But here, they're horrible, and hopefully you'll tune in and make them aware of how you feel and just what your sentiments are on this. And that's, again, today between 4 and 6, 427-3772. Normally, you get 3 minutes at City Council. Hopefully, the host, old lady Scararms, will allow a lot of opportunity for interaction, discussion, and criticism, because that's the only criticism these council members get. They are fawned on by the media. They are insulated from any kind of significant discussions in any public way. And I'm glad that they're coming in today, assuming they do. Kennedy canceled Actually, he was a no-show six times on the Free Radio Santa Cruz in the 90s, and he's gotten better. He was on the Old Lady Scararm show, and apparently has come through on at least the two occasions that I've heard of, and I haven't heard of his canceling out there. So 4 to 6 today, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Homeless in Space, by the way, the show that Nick Whitehead, the radio show that Nutcracker Nick put together, satire, which I've played in three parts on the air in the last month or two, was announced for today in the Good Times as coming on at 10 a.m. I should have mentioned this at 10 a.m., but for those of you who are still listening, if you want, it's a misprint. It's already been played, but if you do want to hear Homeless in Space, you should contact Nick Whitehead, and his phone number is 475-2012, 475-2012. That's for that's the director and producer of Homeless in Space. There's also hoping we can get a call-in from Becky Johnson, who is not only the producer of the show, but is also a criminal chocker in her own right. She's been convicted twice of defacing the sidewalk for writing such subversive slogans as sleep is not a crime, for drawing the lines that would indicate where you can sit and you can't sit under the new downtown ordinances in erasable chalk sold downtown at Palisade Stationery. And she's being sued by the city for $100 on top of the fines and community service she's already done. Again, in a very unusual procedure where she went to small claims court last week. She may call to talk about that. That case was put off. Maybe we can get her to call in and give us an analysis of that case. Tuesday Night Out is coming up. That's day after tomorrow. That's the last one of those one-block pedestrian mall for 3 hour things paid for out of the pocketbooks of the Coalition for Community Commons, because the city council is unwilling to respond to the strong public demand and desire for a plaza or for public events downtown. Instead, we have the business as usual mentality, massive amounts of money going into police and social control programs like the HOSTS, instead of there being programs that would actually increase people's opportunities and people's access to public spaces and make it really a more welcoming environment downtown. Instead, people are criminalized as a way of welcoming a very special group of money-paying people to a very particular class of people, merchants. I have got with me in the studio and will be reading soon from Illegal to be Homeless, the Criminalization of Homelessness in the United States, the August 2003 report from the National Coalition. Really an excellent report. There's a copy of it in the library, as I may have mentioned in past shows. I encourage you to check it out. It's it has a lot of interesting anecdotal information about California, and Tuesday night I'm going to be showing up for a final time with the Huff Table, because it's the final Tuesday Night Out at this 5-to-8 event. We're going to be serving brownies against bigotry again, and we're going to be beginning as usual in front of the Pacific Trading Company, the store that criminalized sitting on the Walnut and Pacific Planter through their pressure on the city manager's office and city council and their connivance with the redevelopment agency to eliminate seating spaces, 20 of them downtown, and of course along with Jackson Shoes, pushing for these anti-homeless downtown ordinances. And I'll begin reading from this report, which gives you a broader perspective on how this is coming out of different cities and sort of like a national repressive wave that's sweeping the country. The website, www.huffsantacruz.org, which is the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, which I recommend to you, the blog, as we call it, which is the most recent events, which is connected to the website where you can actually read recent flyers from Huff, has been hacked, and it's down for the moment, but it will be up again in a few days, apparently, according to our experts. And you can still check out some more dated stuff on the Huff website. You can also find good information about civil rights for poor people and ongoing events and on the Indie Media website at www.santacruz.indymedia.org. A good site for local information, though it's Chemtrail City. There are pretty much a huge amount of discussion of chemtrails, and for my money, not enough discussion of the kinds of harassment that you hear me documenting with the different taped interviews. Also going to be playing in the next hour the John Maurer, Paul Sanford situation, where John has been twice cited for having a Fuck the Pigs sign on his hat. And you say, well, what is this, an obscene sign downtown? Come on. Is this worth bringing up? And the answer is, well, criticism of the police department often happens in a rather colorful and caustic way after the police have harassed people repeatedly, and that's what happened according to John's account to him. He's a former Street Spirit vendor. Street Spirit is the homeless newspaper that I write for and that is sold by homeless people as an alternative to panhandling. And we're going to hear an interview about that. He's going to court in late September, John. He's with attorney Paul Sanford, who will be arguing that the city, again, is pursuing an unconstitutional course of action using an unconstitutional law. And there's a good discussion of that. I think there's going to be a study coming out in the Good Times soon, too. So stay tuned for that in the next hour. And then Tuesday night again on Channel 27, I think it's Channel 27, at 7 p.m., you're going to be able to hear and see the history of the Jason Pascal case. Jason Pascal is the rather rough-tongued man. He was on last Thursday. We reached him in Arkansas, who was deported from town for the crime of, gosh, was it putting a blanket over a milk crate and reading tarot cards? Was it setting up a tarot card reading on the flat public cement water box there at right in front of the Cooper House? Was it smoking medical marijuana with a medical marijuana card? Was it having needles for his diabetic condition? All these are things which Sergeant Baker repeatedly, one after another, arrested him for. But no, he was finally deported after apparently repeated urgings from somebody in Santa Cruz, and we suspect it was Sergeant Baker, because Baker was the one who apparently twice picked up Jason Pascal on this issue of his old warrant from New Hampshire, and that was for not completing a jail term for possession with intent to sell less than a quarter ounce of marijuana, for which he'd already served a year and a half. It gets pretty nasty in the police department when they want to get rid of you around here in many cases, and it did for Jason. If you want to see that whole thing, that's going to be on Club Cruise, Channel 27, 7 p.m. Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock this week. You'll be seeing actually the history, not so much the most recent stuff, which you can get some updates by going on the Indie Media website again, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org. Well, in case any of this stirs you, I remind you the phone number is 427-3772. And now a little bit of this.
I suppose you think I'm being cynical. If you can't be careful, try to be good. Well, we cared and we cared as much as we could. We always agreed, me and my man, we said someday we'll try the family plan. The first thing we tried was nothing at all. I called the amateur ride and everything's here fall. We charted my time, followed my moon, but then someday came a little too soon. I got the 9 months of blues. Too much to gain, too much to lose. But he was kind of happy when he heard my news. I got the 9 months of blues. There was him and me and the baby made three. But we made up our minds to stay that way. With little bitty things made of rubber and such. And cause we were friends, we decided to go Dutch. When we said I do, it was a solemn oath. So we did and we did and it pleased us both. We still can't figure out what went wrong. But that's the first line of the 9 month song. I got the 9 months of blues. Too much to gain, too much to lose. I get out the dress and the sensible shoes. I got the 9 months of blues. I said, this time around I'm gonna cast my stone. I'm gonna have a chance to call my life my own. About the SPC, the FDA, they said to keep that child, don't play it away. The doctor said he had the the right to refuse. The law says if you want to beat the noose, you gotta be rich or near to your grave. So away I went again on my 9-month rave. I got the 9-month blues. Too much to gain, too much to lose. And that time around, I got them in twos. I got the 9 months blues.
Change. I don't know. It seems like panhandlers have more rights than a street musician, and this isn't just in Santa Cruz. This is all over the place. So it's harder to you know, make an honest living and not ask than it is to sit there and ask all day long. Which I have nothing against the panhandler. They do what they do, and they're there making their statement, and I love them. But you know, it should be just as easy for me to set my stuff up and play on the streets.
When was the last time you were in Santa Cruz?
2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago.
Did you find any difficulties then?
No, only because I was here for a day, but I was here for about a month prior to that, and let me think here. There were no real problems, except a friend of mine was murdered and thrown down by the jetty.
Who was that?
His name is Silver Bullet, or Gary Smitley. He was a panhandler out here. I guess he liked to drink, and he did his share of drinking, but he never laid a finger on anybody, and I would vouch for that. I'm witness to that. He never hurt a soul, and I think just one thing led to another, and he talked to the wrong person the wrong way, and wound up, got it.
How was he killed?
You know what? I'm still not sure. I'm looking into that. I was thinking about heading down as when I'm done, down to the library and looking into the...
Was he killed on the riverbank or elsewhere?
It was the jetty. Down by the jetty, yeah.
And which month was this?
This was, I believe it was either end of May or beginning of June last year.
2002.
Yeah. Good friend of mine, I'd known him for years. That's why I can vouch that he'd never touch a soul. He wouldn't hurt a soul.
Anyone ever convicted of the crime?
I don't believe so. He's just another statistic out here, you know, and he didn't have an ID. So unless they went through all the hassle and did all their homework, the chances are they don't know who he is. And he went under unknown under the obituaries. So I'd like to bring a name to that base, and that's Gary Smithley.
Give me advice. Everybody knows about Gary Smithy. Call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Thank you.
Thank you.
You were actually a performer at the Right to Sleep Summit.
Yes, I was. Yep, it was a great time. I actually slept back there, too. Yes.
In Santa Cruz, that's a rarity for a homeless person to sleep legally.
Yeah, I hear that. No, that was a great opportunity to sing some songs in protest for the right cause and protest for myself and my fellow transient friends out here. If I get an opportunity like that again, I'd be more than happy to step in and play another song or two.
Good. Well, we'll play this on the air. You have a great voice.
Thank you.
Call Sanford.
That it makes sense for us to ask the court to still resolve the constitutional issues as well, so they don't do this anymore to anyone else.
Right.
Because I'm concerned that they may be sweeping this under the rug.
And what you're hearing now is a discussion with Paul Sanford, John Maurer, and I guess Laurel Chesky is also there, the Good Times reporter, downtown on Pacific Avenue, middle of last week, around the issue of this Fuck the Pigs sign on John's hat, which is being taken to court.
In order to say, well, now that John is asserting his constitutional rights and he has a trial scheduled, and the court has ordered both sides to brief the constitutional issues,
right,
and the city is perhaps concerned that it is unconstitutional law, I'm concerned that they are trying to deny your right to have the court litigate the constitutional issues by dismissing the ticket. So
yeah,
it's good.
I was just thinking that as soon as you said that.
I'm cool with that.
Okay.
They're not doing us a favor to dismiss them because we will prevail at trial anyway.
And especially now.
Yeah, we would have anyway, but now they're basically admitting that the tickets were issued wrongfully.
Right.
Okay? So I'm feeling good about all that, but I feel like we need to seize this opportunity to get this. The city should not be afraid, I believe. They should not fear of having a judge discuss and decide whether one of their laws is constitutional.
Right.
In a democracy, what could a city possibly have to hide when a judge has already ordered both the city attorney and your attorney to submit briefs on the constitutional issues?
Right.
What could the city possibly have to hide in terms of not allowing the case to move forward? So I made a request today. I talked to Assistant City Attorney Wendy Morgan this morning, and I told her that I had received the letter, and that we are asking the city attorney to not oppose allowing the constitutional issues to be decided by Commissioner Joseph. Because we believe it's in everyone's interest, in the police interest, in the taxpayers' interest, and in your interest, to know whether or not they can keep applying this law, which we believe to be unconstitutional.
Right.
So we're waiting now to hear back from the city attorney on whether they're going to fight allowing Commissioner Joseph to read my brief.
Okay.
And I think that would be and I'm hoping our friends in the press, among others, will find out from, and there are a couple media representatives here. I'm hoping that our friends in the press will ask that question to the city attorney as well. I anticipate the city attorney may say something like, this was such a frivolous case that we didn't want to waste the taxpayers' money on having a trial. And our answer to that is, one, how much the taxpayers' money has been used, enforcing indiscriminately an unconstitutional law and then sending it through the court system and then having the city attorney prepare a defense when that ordinance is constitutionally challenged. Mr. Moore's lawyer has already spent at least 60 hours on this. Mr. Moore has lost sleep and been hassled in his own community because of this. All that's left now is to allow the briefs to be read and have a 30-minute meeting before the judge and let Commissioner Joseph make a ruling. And how can the city possibly be afraid of that bright light shining on this beacon of a city?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a question. So they're going to dismiss this, right?
They asked the judge to dismiss it because they know they're going to lose. The judge has not dismissed it yet.
So if the judge does dismiss it, we're still going to go forward with everything.
The city and the court to continue and hear the case on its merits. If the city declines and or the judge declines to do so, we have other remedies available which will eventually get this before a superior court judge anyway. As they say in boxing, the city can run, but it can't hide.
Okay, but can they reopen this case against me? Since you and I are agreeing on keeping it going, can they still find me guilty then? And
if the case is dismissed, then double jeopardy requires that you cannot be punished again for those citations. They would be gone forever. But I'm more concerned about what's going to happen today and tomorrow, John, to you and to others. But the good news is, I don't know if you have your hat and your sign with you.
I have the sign, but I don't have the hat.
If you feel like displaying it any further, you can proudly and fairly demonstrate your support of the United States Constitution by wearing it again. The letter from the city attorney says, the purpose of this letter is to request dismissal of the citations. It says you were arraigned. It says, it appears from the information we reviewed that Mr. Maurer, did not specifically direct profanity at individuals from whom he was soliciting relative to these citations. Accordingly, and then they go on to criticize you in a sleazy fashion. They say, accordingly, though, they eventually get on to, in all likelihood, his conduct does not technically constitute a violation of the city's aggressive solicitation ordinance. So they're admitting the officer made a mistake, not once, but twice in a 3-day period by harassing you. I'll get to that. But of course, there's no apology in here, and there's no actual acknowledgement that the officer made a mistake. There's mainly in here is there's all kinds of criticisms about what a terrible person you are and how you're making downtown unpleasant and unsafe. That's all in there. The case hasn't been dismissed. So in theory, the judge could say, no, I don't want to dismiss it. I want to hear the constitutional issues, and I want to hear the facts. And the judge could even disagree with the city.
That's what we want, right?
We want the court to litigate the constitutional issues.
We don't want to have him dismiss it.
So the commissioner, because you want the commissioner to rule the constitutionality.
Yes.
But what if he says, no, I think this is constitutional, and I think he's guilty?
He certainly could, and we'd be pleased to take our chances and have that opportunity to present our case. The city has already acknowledged that their opinion is that he wasn't breaking the ordinance. The whole problem with the ordinance is it vests all this authority. It turns police officers into legislators.
Right.
It allows police officers to decide what profane language is. That is so hopelessly vague that it gives an inordinate and extraordinary power that the executive branch is not constitutionally permitted to have. And so the law is vague, the law is overbroad, it punishes so more speech than conceivably is necessary to advance the government's interest, and the law is based on content. This is not an ordinance. The sitting laws, the solicitation laws about the zones where you're permitted to solicit, those are called time, place, and manner ordinances. I don't know whether ours is constitutional or not, but those aren't about the content of the speech.
Right.
They're not about what you're saying. They're just about that you're saying it.
In case you're wondering, you're listening to Paul Sanford, attorney for John Maurer. The female voice is that of Laurel Chesky, the Good Times reporter who's writing a story about this. And the law in question is a city municipal code 9.10040D. And it reads, any person who solicits in any of the following manners is guilty of an infraction: by using profane or abusive language either during the solicitation or following a refusal. And what John was doing was, he's going to describe what he was doing. But as I said, he had a fuck the police or pigs sign in his hat after having been repeatedly abused by police. And Paul Sanford is giving you the details on this. And I just gave you the law.
The effect of your speech on other people. Mm-hmm. The word profane is entirely replete with meaning and content. It's not at all about the effect on the listener. We don't have a problem with the word abusive. Of course, John Maurer wasn't abusive, nor was he profane. And you have a police officer who's basically, perhaps in good faith, interpreting the law, making the law,
right,
enforcing the law, and then a city running away when someone complains and stands up and says, this has to stop. And John Maurer, I think, is saying, this has to stop. And people, if the city has an ordinance that's unconstitutional on the books, and if the city is enforcing it selectively against unpopular people who say unpopular things against the police department, it's so blatantly unconstitutional to be laughable, and it has to be stopped. Right, John?
Right. That's the other ticket.
I've got a copy of
this ticket.
Oh, it's another one?
No, that's the second one.
This is the May 22?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a copy of this one.
Okay.
So you can, but feel free. Do you have your F sign with you?
Yes.
Because I wouldn't be surprised if our friends in the press were interested in seeing it.
Yeah, I'd like to take some photos. Would that be okay with you?
Yeah, I don't have my other big sign that I had for pennies. I can make one, though. That's what this is for.
What the other sign said? Spare pennies,
it
please?
It says unwanted pennies and others. Thank you.
Did you have your hat with you?
I don't. I lost that hat a long time ago.
But
I had the sign.
Okay.
We can demonstrate it a little bit. So.
And where were you sitting?
Nearby. I was sitting over in front of Dale Williams one time. Okay, yeah.
Recreate the moment.
Should we get a hat?
So, yeah, borrow a hat. You're spare changing. How's it going?
Not very good.
Well, I think you need a small donation here. What's your name?
Chrissy.
And where are you from, Chrissy?
I'm from Colorado.
And how long you been in town?
About 6 months.
I'm going to be back to talk to you later, Chrissy.
Thank you.
Day in court. That's all we're asking for is his day in court.
Can we take a picture of the door?
I got the first ticket from Dale Williams.
Don't you have anything better to do?
Did the cops have this?
Okay. Dale Williams, a guy from Dale Williams, came out.
A guy that works there.
Yeah, came out and said, don't you have anything better to do? And I said, talk to the fucking hand. The fucking hand don't care. And then I think it was because I had the sign in my hat. And so then I got a ticket for that.
Did you have the sign in your hat at that time?
I think I did. I'm not positive, but because this is a while back, you know. And then my other ticket, I think it was in front of...
And Paul has arrived with a sock hat. Did you purchase that hat?
They're
kind enough to loan it.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
So this is lent by the hat company.
Put the cap, put your sign in the way.
So we have an individual concerned about...
So, no, they say the words, but they're offensive. They shouldn't be displayed in public like that.
I have a right. If you don't like it, vote to change the law.
Are you talking about freedom of speech?
Yes, I am.
That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm speaking, and
okay,
I'm telling you that the words that you're displaying are offensive, that there are young families. This has turned into a thriving, rich, beautiful community of families and children coming down here, and they don't need to see this kind of obscenity in public. So I would prefer that you not do it. So I'm asking you, I'm not saying that you can't do it. I'm not saying that it's illegal. What I'm doing is I'm asking you, as one human being to another, as a courtesy, please don't do that.
Fair request. Thank you. Of course, he doesn't understand the reason that you did it was because you were harassed repeatedly by police, right? You should ask him about the specifics. Oh, yeah, no, that's good. That's good.
People are offended, right? One day I was displaying a bunch of junk, trinkets. They called it merchandise. And there were six cops standing around here, three COs, or community officers. I was sitting right here, yes. And there were six of them. There were three community officers and three regular officers.
Okay.
And they gave me a ticket for that. And then...
For what?
For displaying of merchandise.
Okay. And when did that happen?
That happened... May... Or, let me see. When did that happen? Let's take a picture here. I haven't...
And John's pulling out his yellow ticket.
That one I can't read, and that might be the one, too. That is that one. This is the one with displaying of merchandise. Happened...
What do you got?
The 21st? Or something like... Well, somewhere near May something.
It's okay in May?
Yeah, it was in May that I did it.
Okay.
And then... then I got a move along. Then I got a move along ticket because I did not move within an hour. So that's when I started pulling out the signs because up until this point I only had 3 tickets in this town from the previous years. I mean, I was here. I've been here about 8-9 years now, and I've only gotten 3 tickets up until May of this year. Then I got 3 more or 4 more.
Okay, 3 up until May.
Right. Then I got 2 within a couple days, and then I decided to put my signs out, and I got 2 more for the soliciting or using profane language while soliciting. And then since then I've gotten 2 more tickets. One for a bike with no light at night, which is I could see that. And then I got another ticket for spare changing after dark. So I've gotten 4. Yes, it is.
For anything of value after dark.
After dark.
After dark. Anywhere in town.
Okay. Then I got 2, 4, 5 tickets within the last 3 months. 3 months for spare changing and stuff like that. So I've gotten 7 tickets total in the last 3 months.
7
tickets. One for the fix of the bike with no light at night, and then the rest were for spare changing and stuff.
Okay.
So, and I thought that was harassment. I mean, I've gotten 3 tickets in all the time I've been here, and then all of a sudden I get in 2 or 3 in a couple of days. That's harassment in my book. So
before you had the sign, you had the one for displaying merchandise.
Right.
And you had the one for not moving along.
Right.
And then
I put the sign out.
And then you put the sign out.
And then I got the other 2 tickets for the profanity while spare changing.
Was there a third that you got before you got
No, there is
the 2,
and then I got the 2 for displaying the
I
sign.
I about this situation where you tried to help an old lady into the Palomar.
Oh, yeah, I was going to get to that. One day, I was just from here to the door, there was an old lady, she's 92 years old, and I was helping her open the door for people to go into the Palomar. And that lady, in fact, she's kind of touched in the head. She's kind of crazy, schizophrenia and stuff. And so she came out and started blocking the door, stopped me from opening the door, and told me to get away from the door. But well, then I turned around, and there was 2 officers, a short female and another male, that came out here and was going to take my things in, took my stuff in. And I was just at the door right there. I mean, what's that, 40 feet from here, 30 feet? I don't know. It's not very far. I mean,
it's also illegal under the new downtown ordinance
to leave
unattended property on the sidewalk.
You were just right there.
Yeah, I was just right there. I mean, I could see my things from there.
And I think it's important, by the way, for this ticket that was right here, that he was in what is the size of his constitutional squatting zone here? It goes 13 feet from there?
Beyond
14 feet.
It's 14 from where the building buttresses the street, or the sidewalk.
Here, and you can't go past the sidewalk,
right? And it's 7 of the squares.
And Paul Sanford, the attorney, is measuring it out by counting feet here, foot over foot.
Minor probably a tad over a foot.
So it's 7 of the squares.
So right around here.
Yeah,
so you're in your zone because you've got the whole space for free speech all the way from here,
except
here.
For one.
The whole 4 squares.
Street furniture, light poles, and
this doesn't count.
Oh, okay, good.
Going to count benches count.
So he was in
not
begging,
poles.
His begging zone.
In the begging zone. Yes. And this is a rather long tape of Paul Sanford acquainting Good Times reporter Laurel Chesky with the
recent constitutional depredations of Santa Cruz Police Department as empowered by the Santa Cruz City Council with the attempt to get rid of homeless-looking people downtown who are engaging in such things as peaceful, even silent, solicitation with a sign. That's what they went after Maurer for. And when he responded to police harassment with a fuck the pig sign in his hat, he was harassed further. And when I brought this up at City Council, as I've reported before, they turned off my mic. They shut off the camera. I had a fuck the police t-shirt I wore to illustrate that it is, in fact, a constitutional right to be able to have that somewhat repugnant message, somewhat intense message, but at times justified message and certainly honest expression of feeling. And you heard a gentleman talking about how he finds this expression of speech repugnant, and one could sympathize with him in saying that there are children present and families downtown, and how can this be? And the answer is that beneath the friendly, revivified downtown hustle and bustle of the merchants, there's a silent kind of persistent repression that is being used to kind of keep this Disneyland merry-go-round going. Not necessary, I mean, actually, but it's being done anyway, based upon the apprehensions and paranoias of merchants like those at the Pacific Trading Company and Jackson Shoes that we encourage you to boycott, and other stores as well. So I'm going to turn now to the Illegal to be Homeless report, which I'm going to be trying to present the California sections of it on Tuesday to the community when we do our Brownies Against Bigotry Chapter 3 downtown in front of the Pacific Trading Company from 5 to 8 on the Tuesday event where there's a closing off of the street. This report is just, to me, very well done in terms of the kinds of issues it raises. I'm a little bit concerned about the specifics in the different cities. The Santa Cruz section is incomplete, and they didn't contact local activists on this issue, and it's sort of unfortunate. And we kind of amplified that section by adding our own flyer called Still Even More Illegal to be Homeless in Santa Cruz, Expanded August 2003 Update, which you'll be able to get a copy of on Tuesday if you haven't already seen it. But this is still a very interesting report. Illegal to be Homeless, the Criminalization of the Homeless in the United States. I'm going to read a bit from it. If you have any comments you want to call in, interrupt, give your own reflections, 427-3772. This is the executive summary. This report, Illegal to be Homeless, the Criminalization of Homelessness in the United States, is the second report after the 2002 report by the same title. The report documents the widespread trend of the violations of the basic human rights of people experiencing homelessness in 147 communities in 42 states, Puerto Rico, and the District of Columbia. Through the passage of laws which are unconstitutional, the selective enforcement of existing laws, arbitrary police practices, and discriminatory public regulations, people experiencing homelessness face overwhelming hardships in addition to the daily struggle of survival. Instead of spending precious public resources and funding to address the significant lack of affordable housing in this country, local governments in urban, suburban, and rural areas divert these funds to police departments and local business improvement districts, BIDs, BIDs, which penalize people for being homeless. In addition to continuing to document this trend, this report documents the connections between the creation of a public environment of intolerance and the increasing danger of living on the streets that results from this attitude towards people experiencing homelessness. This report continues to investigate and present the evidence that criminalization is not only a local issue, but also a national one that demands a federal response. We have asserted and continue to assert that a pattern and practice of civil rights violations and unconstitutional behaviors by local government authorities, including the police and other city agencies, exist in many cities around the country. These practices exact enormous economic, social, and individual costs and do nothing to alleviate the root causes of homelessness. We have a phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello. This is a tape.
Overwhelming hardships in addition to... Oh, I'm sorry. Survival. Instead of spending precious... Good point. We have a tape that's currently still going. Significant
lack of affordable housing. Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Pot your computer down a little bit.
Yeah, it looks strange.
You're over-modulating. Okay. And I know that because I'm listening to my computer.
Okay, and you're hearing my voice coming on the air right now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's strange. I don't know where it's coming from.
But it's overmodulated.
Yeah, no, not only is it overmodulated, it's coming from an anonymous source. It's not coming from the studio. But thank you for calling in.
Okay.
Alrighty.
All right.
Bye-bye. Huh, that's very strange. Boy, when I turn on the radio here, I don't hear it. Strange. If anyone else is experiencing this, if you're hearing what the caller is hearing, and I heard it from coming from his, he's hearing my voice coming out of the radio, not the speech that you hear me speaking now, but apparently a tape. Please call in and let me know. We have no tape playing. We have an alive person talking here, and I'm not sure why the caller is hearing my voice coming over as he's hearing it. But I'll continue reading, and we'll see what we can do here to deal with this spooky situation. Not, of course, as spooky as the civil rights violations that are becoming a daily part of the landscape, an hourly, or even a half-hourly, 15-minutely, 5-minutely, I don't know what, continual part of the landscape. The Bush administration's reduction of funding and tax cuts, the elimination of necessary services, and the continued gentrification of subsidized housing has moved this country backwards in responding to the urgent needs of deepening poverty. The status of this country's economy and the growing rate of unemployment makes the situation for many people experiencing homelessness especially grave and makes the recommendations of this report especially timely. With the unemployment rate at the highest it has been since the early 1990s and cuts in funding for service-providing organizations, the deepening economic recession gives no indication of improving the plight of those individuals without jobs or without homes. The use of public space, including sleeping outside and in cars parked on public streets, is being increasingly limited. For those people who must live in public spaces without access to shelter, public restrooms, and places to store their belongings, the implications continue to be disastrous. In light of the state of the current economy and of the increasing hostility towards people experiencing homelessness, the National Coalition for the Homeless, state and city coalitions, and local member organizations believe that working towards ending the causes of homelessness, not simply removing homeless people from view, is cost-effective, not to mention just. In 2002, the National Coalition for the Homeless and the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty released a report examining and documenting the criminalization of acts necessary to survival when committed in public space. Because people experiencing homelessness must live and survive in public space, this criminalization directly and almost solely applies to them. Another call here, and we'll take that. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Robert. This is Eleanor.
Hey, Eleanor.
Hi.
Long time no hear.
I don't know where you are in the program because, unfortunately, I still can't get you in where I live. But I would hope it would be all right with you. I have a little message for all you activists out there.
Please.
If you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Thank you. This Friday, the Workers' Compensation Conference Committee is voting on a bill, SB 354. That will take away chiropractic care from injured workers by limiting their entitlement to relief to only 15 visits, period. We do have the Labor Code 4600 in place that says that whatever it takes to cure or relieve, that's all the workers have, injured workers, left since the Boynton Act, which gutted everything else. So I'm asking everyone, I mean, I don't have to tell any of you how devastating this will be if they succeed. Many people rely on chiropractic care to continue on their jobs after they've been injured, and it's, in many cases, the only relief from pain they have. So if you would all please call and fax each of the following committee members by Thursday and implore them to cast a no vote on SB 354. I don't know if we have the time here for me to give you. There's 6 members, Senator John Burton, Senator Richard Alarcon, Senator Charles Poochigian, Assemblymember Juan Vargas, Assemblymember Fabian Nunez, Assemblymember Ken Maddox. Now, I have their phone numbers and their faxes if you want them. It's up to you which you think would be easier for me to give people.
You know, what we need to do is there a number people can call to get them? Because that way individuals can call when they have a pencil and paper. And
that's true. Let me see if I have... well, I got a letter from a chiropractor who I had visited some months ago, and he sent me this. Now, I guess you could call him, but I don't have his number in front of me, so... not planning ahead.
Why don't you do this?
Get it, unless you want me to get off the air and call back.
Sure,
this
you can.
Is real
you can,
important.
Sure, you can do that, or alternately, you can call the Huff line. And people can call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and I will call them back if anybody calls in with a request for these numbers.
Oh, that's wonderful. This is so important. I personally know several people who are injured workers and are only able to stay on their job through chiropractic care, and once they cut this, they're not going to be able to work anymore, not counting the thousands of us, like myself, who rely on chiropractic for pain relief through these injuries. So what you can do is that if anybody who is interested in sending a fax or a phone call, or they can even do it with Sam Farr or McPherson and have either one of them urge these members to cast a no vote this coming Friday. So that would be a good idea. I'll call in the Huff line and I'll give you the numbers. Is that what you want to do?
Yeah, call into the Huff line, give me the numbers and also the number of the doctor, the main source that you got this from. And I guess Farr's number, it's either 429-1976 or 427-1976.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
I'm not sure which is one of those two. And you can reach him as a 24-hour line.
Gee, that's terrific.
Well, if he ever did anything about these calls, it would be great. Yeah, I mean, actually, sometimes he does respond with a,
yes, it's true. It's true. But sometimes all you need is just the plant of the idea in their head, and it comes out later on without them even realizing it. I know I called Sam. I wrote Sam Farr several months ago about an issue I have here where I live. And he responded, and he wrote to HUD. He called HUD, and he wrote to HUD, and I got some action.
Great.
I mean, it's
great.
Still pending, but it lit a fire.
That's good, and I hope we're going to play Farr's comments on ending the war or not ending the war or fudging on the issue on Thursday, which is another issue, of course, and an important one. The number Farr's office, I believe, is 429-1976. It could be 427-1976, so try the other one if the first one doesn't work. Yeah, and also, if you want the numbers specifically to call directly to the state legislators involved or their fax numbers, email addresses would be good, too, if you could find out what those are, Eleanor.
They didn't give us an email address.
Right, you might... you can also, of course, go online and get their email address by looking up their names. That's another thing that anybody can do out there. Call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and I will get back to you by phone. You won't be able to hear it on my message, but I will get back to you with the information that you're leaving, Eleanor, for those who
are interested. Oh, thank you so much. This is so important. Thank you so much, Robert.
Hey, you're welcome.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And, yeah, really important that people pressure the legislators, spread the information. I don't know. Actually, pressuring the legislators never seemed to be... least effective on the issues I've been concerned with, but there obviously are some issues probably in which it is effective, and this might be one of those issues, particularly if Farr is amenable to that. And that's a local call, 429-1976. I'm reading now from the Illegal to be Homeless report of the National Coalition for the Homeless, and here's more of that. Because people experiencing homelessness must live and survive in public space, this criminalization directly and almost solely applies to them. Since the release of that 2002 report, many of the cities examined have passed new ordinances or have become stricter in the enforcement of pre-existing legislation, and Santa Cruz, by the way, is one of those cities. As a result of the pressure of downtown business interests and, in some cases, tourism, local governments regulate homelessness by attempting to reduce its visibility through strict enforcement of, quote, quality of life laws, as well as physically relocating people living on the streets. The enforcers of these ordinances, whether city park officials or police officers, have little or no training or knowledge of existing local resources, available services, or effective techniques for working with people who may be experiencing mental health, chemical dependency, or chronic medical issues. As free voluntary treatment options disappear, cities are choosing jail to manage the, quote, homeless problem instead of addressing the root causes of homelessness. This new report continues the effort to reveal discriminatory local practices which have frequently been challenged and modified but continue to reemerge, often in a more aggressive and harmful form. When litigated, quality of life laws, so-called, have sometimes been determined in both local and federal courts to be unconstitutional. As these continue to be utilized as, quote, solutions to the visibility of homelessness, advocates must confront them with vigilance. purpose of the report. The purpose of this second report is to continue to evaluate the general attitude toward homelessness by documenting the pattern of civil rights violations perpetrated against people experiencing homelessness nationwide. In addition to this evaluation, the report presents recommendations around which to organize and litigate for basic civil rights. The continuing and growing pressure on the U.S. Department of Justice to investigate crimes and violence that are a result of this documentation of criminalization is a heartening reality. And you can take a look at the National Coalition for the Homeless's April report, Hate, Violence, and Death on Main Street USA, a report on hate crimes and violence against people experiencing homelessness, 1999 to 2002. And I believe that report showed Santa Cruz was, what, third in the country for violent incidents per capita, a figure which I dispute, but based on their data, which is incomplete, was accurate. And indeed, apparently the figure is even worse if you consider on a per capita basis and re-examine the figures more closely. But the incomplete data makes it an uncertain figure, but still, even local surveys have shown that you're more likely, according to the police chief, our local police chief, Steve Belcher's own figures, four times more likely to get beaten on the streets if you're homeless than if you're not. So it's like a 400% increase in the danger of violence against you. Although documenting the problem and showing that local changes are possible and worth fighting for is a first step, the growing urgency of the conditions in our towns and cities heighten the desperate need for action. This report has been the means for the formation of linkages among communities. Moreover, it serves as a resource for activists as they work to make local public officials realize that proposed or existing laws criminalizing homelessness are unconstitutional, costly in human and financial terms, and counterproductive. Only after this realization has been made can local advocates move these officials to develop solutions. This report has and will continue to serve as a tool for both local governments and grassroots advocates as they develop both immediate and long-term just solutions to homelessness. Quality of life laws, here's the problem statement. Quality of life laws, or laws which make illegal activities like sleeping, sitting, leaning, cooking, storing personal belongings, urinating, or standing in public places, are discriminately enforced against people experiencing homelessness based on their housing status and criminalize behaviors which in and of themselves are not criminal activities. These laws specifically target people experiencing homelessness because they make illegal behaviors which homeless people must conduct in public spaces because they do not have housing. Findings. Though this report updates and revises the previous report by examining and documenting current laws and activities, the findings and recommendations remain largely the same from the previous report due to the deepening economic recession and the increasing hostility toward visible homelessness. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt your show. Do you think I can get the number that Stacy and Orly gave you?
Their phone number?
Huh?
Their phone number?
Their phone number, yeah.
Yeah, Stacy and Orly's phone number is 724-7815.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sorry to bother you.
No problem. Bye-bye. And continuing with this National Coalition report, these are their findings. The systematic abuse of the civil rights of homeless people is used as a strategy to remove homeless people from sight by local governments and private business districts. And of course, we see this very, very dramatically in Santa Cruz with the downtown ordinances and the tightening. The U.S. Patriot Act, passed without comprehension by the Congress in the wake of 9/11, threatens to lead to the deepening of criminalization and the intensifying of attitudes that permit and encourage hate and violence against homeless people. And indeed, this is why I went to the Bill of Rights Defense Committee locally, which has formed under the leadership of John Gibson and others, to oppose both the Patriot Act and to demand teeth in the Santa Cruz local resolution initially passed last November and then weakened that would bar the city from cooperating with Patriot Act unconstitutional behavior. Arcata, as you know, has done this, and it's actually a crime for city government employees to cooperate, or particularly the heads of the city departments, to cooperate with U.S. Patriot Act unconstitutional behaviors or unconstitutional directives. And but those who are interested, you can contact the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. They met yesterday, and I believe they're going to be meeting again in 2 weeks. They had hoped to get something on the agenda, and Councilmember and Vice Mayor Scott Kennedy had said he was going to put something on the agenda, and as I've commented before, Kennedy was the one who sabotaged the matter in November by removing the very language that this committee now wants to restore, which is to make it not just an optional response by the police chief, but a real mandated response that you cannot, city employees will not be giving out library lists, city employees will not be colluding in warrantless taps, they will not be colluding in terrorist designations and secret spying and things of that sort. I'm hoping to get an update on this issue from the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, a member directly who was at the last meeting. I was not at the meeting yesterday. I only have secondhand reports, and I'd like to get a more direct report. Perhaps John Gibson or some other member of the committee would like to call in and comment on that. There is some local controversy swirling around their attempt to divorce themselves from a resolution opposing the move-along law, which they originally passed. And then they said they were going to do it as a letter, and that apparently has been defeated as well, not by a majority vote, but by sort of executive action. It's a difficult situation to fathom exactly what's happening there, and it's too bad if that's going on. Sometimes committees and inexperienced groups that get together to do this will trust in the promises of city council members and believe advice from those who are well-intentioned, or perhaps not so well-intentioned, close to city council, who specifically suggest that, for example, anyone associating with activists who are directly challenging city council ordinances downtown, that you're not going to get anywhere with city council if you try to stand up against unconstitutional laws downtown. You know, instead, work on that broader national issue far away that doesn't affect local people directly, at least not yet. Though it certainly is true and has been pointed out by John Gibson and others that the Patriot Act, and I pointed this out, affects all of us, and we need to oppose it, and we need to get some teeth in the ordinance that should be stopping city officials and police departments from colluding. And along those lines, there was a Homelands grant we learned from Dave Meserve, the Green City Council member from Arcata, which, actually, we learned that from reading the Santa Cruz Sentinel, but he gave an interesting analysis of, this is a grant to firemen under the Homeland Security Act, and I think the police department is also getting some kinds of Homeland Security Act grants, and I've suggested that the Bill of Rights Defense Committee look into this, and I was actually going to file a Public Records Act request myself. I haven't done that yet. We're all kind of doing 100 things at once. Hopefully, all this will be, done, and you can ask Kennedy and Rotkin. They're going to be on the air at 4 o'clock. Just what kind of Homeland Security money is going to the police department, and what kind of Homeland Security money is going to the fire department, and what kind of strings are attached to that. And you can call in from 4 to 6. They're going to be debating the downtown ordinances with Joe Williams. That might be a time to raise that issue with them. It's also a time to call city council and ask them to put on the ballot, I should say, on the agenda, the putting teeth back in the Patriot Act. You can call them at 420-5020. You can support that effort being pushed by the Bill of Rights Defense Committee to their credit. Continuing with this illegal to be homeless report,